This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. More and more, art doesn't just hang on the walls or sit on pedestals in art galleries. Art experts are taking it to the streets. There's a push here and around the country for more public art. The idea is that public art can enrich and enliven a community. It can tell a city's story, a neighborhood's story. Art can add beauty, visual interest, character, and more by its mere presence. And public art also gives local artists a chance to contribute to the fabric of the place they live and give a sense of place to a community. What's not to like about public art? Seems like an easy question to answer in the affirmative, but not all people get it. Charlotte has had a rocky relationship with public art from time to time, but perhaps a discussion of just what public art is and how it functions, why it's important, how the pieces and locations are chosen might be valuable. And with that in mind, we welcome Robert Bush to the program. He's president of the Arts and Science Council. Good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm good. Tom Warshauer is Community Engagement Manager for Neighborhood and Business Services for the City of Charlotte. His hands are in public art. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Sharon Dowell is here. She is a painter, Public Art Commission artist, and Rowe Galleries coordinator and adjunct professor at UNC Charlotte. She's currently a master's in arts administration candidate at Winthrop University and earned a BFA from UNC Charlotte in 2002. She exhibits her work nationally in the collections of the Federal Reserve Bank, SPX, the Renaissance Hotel, PricewaterhouseCoopers, Fidelity Investments, and Duke Energy, and she still has time to be here. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. When we talk about public art, are we talking only about art paid for by taxpayer money? Or are we talking about art that businesses sometimes put in their lobbies or outside in their courtyards or in the front stoop of their business, like the Nikki de Saint-Phalle Firebird sculpture in front of the Beckler? That's owned by the Beckler, but it's outside.
Right. I think public art comes in many different ways, and it's paid for in different ways. In Charlotte, we are very fortunate to have a corporate community that is highly engaged in public art. So you have Wells Fargo Green with the incredible literary sort of references in that park down the other end of Tryon Street.
Near the Radcliffe.
Near the Radcliffe on the Green, correct. Mm-hmm. You've got the Pomodoro that sits on the Bank of America Plaza.
That's the big bronze disc.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That used to spin.
You even have the frescoes in the lobby of the Bank of America Corporate Center. In the early 2000s, the city and the county also both approved a public art ordinance that sets aside 1% of the of certain capital costs of construction of a public building to specifically commission artwork for that building, mm-hmm. or to pool those dollars with other dollars for smaller projects and place a major piece in another place.
Right,
so we have different kinds of public art here.
And right down the street in front of the Imaginon, which is the Children's Library and the Children's Theater Building, there are these little literary sculptures to Rolf Neal's.
Right, and that was actually a gift of a number of friends of Rolf Neal who raised those dollars to have that piece commissioned. Mm-hmm. But we have others. The four sculptures at the square were a gift from the Queen's Table, which has been around since 1980s. And actually, the first piece that they did was the wind sculpture on West Trade Street that we just refurbished re-unveiled again on International Sculpture Day a couple weeks ago.
I've heard people complain about many things with regard to public art, but I've never heard anybody complain about the wind sculpture. It's kind of whimsical and colorful, and it kind of fits in and ties everything together down
right
there. The Arts and Science Council has long been the funding source for performance art and for science organizations and things like that. Are you a funder of public art as well?
We administer the public art program for the city and the county, but we also fund through our grants program, some neighborhood pieces. There's a piece in Dilworth neighborhood at Dilworth Road and the end there of the park, Latta Park, that is actually made by the streetcar rail that they uncovered on East Boulevard when they were redoing East Boulevard as part of a city neighborhood improvement project.
Painted bright yellow.
Bright yellow, yes. We funded a mural in NODA on the Matheson Street Bridge underpass. So through our grants program. But we also are more and more funding things in different ways. For example, Sharon is a part of a project that is a joint effort with Adams Outdoor we select 20 artists a year who get a billboard for a year, and they move around the entire region. And I think that the artists that have been involved in that have found that to be an enhancement to their sales of their work. We also have done things
what, wait
like
a minute. Crass commercialism.
Got to eat.
Hey, we'll
pay the mortgage.
We'll take it, you know.
We've also funded with Center City Partners the pianos that were sort of dropped around all over the Center City about a year ago. And
I'm glad you mentioned that because I never thought of those as being an art project. And when I was reading for this program today, that's one of the things that you point out, that these there were these colorfully painted pianos.
Sharon painted one of those too.
That were all over town and with a little sign on it inviting you to sit down and play. And kids would bang on them and real musicians would sit down and actually make music
right.
from them. And I thought, first of all, this is very odd because pianos are very temperature, humidity, and weather sensitive. And these things are sitting out in the rain and the heat and the cold and the humidity, but people would play them.
Well, and you know, the idea for that actually came from a project in Boston where they had 60 pianos all over the city. And the young man who sort of got the most publicity was a Charlotte native who is in school in Boston, and he's a pianist, and he set out to play every one of the 60 pianos, and he got all this national media coverage because he had done that.
Let me bring Tom Warshauer from the city and Sharon Dowell into this and ask the same question of both of you, and I don't care who goes first. Why is public art important?
Oh, gosh, so many reasons. For me, I'll start off by talking about a report that came out from the National Committee for Responsive Philanthropy, or the NCRP. And in it, they found that 90% of Americans say that art in their lives matter, but only 27% actually say that they feel that artists contribute a lot to the good of society, which is a huge paradox. And so for me, I think public art, you know, strong, engaging public art is a great way to kind of break down that barrier and try to change that. And I mean, it takes the intimidation factor out of art. I think for a lot of people, art is still kind of like, you know, I used to work in a gallery. Well, I still work in a gallery, but I used to work in a commercial gallery, and people would come in and say, "Oh, I don't know anything about art."
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, "It's okay. You don't have to." You know, I mean, I'm not a sports person. I'm just not. You know, and there are people that just aren't into art. That's just not their thing.
Right.
And that's okay. But you know, I can appreciate sports, I see its importance, and I just, you know, wish that more people out there would feel the same about art. And
well,
yeah.
The statistics you get really sort of do reflect what happens in Charlotte. People really do want their neighborhoods to be identified. We've done over 100 grants to really help neighborhoods with signage and identification. They want to tell the story of where they live. They want to tell the story of the history of their communities. And when we've been out, I've been working for the city for about 25 years. And over the times when we've been working in commercial business districts and in neighborhoods, people want a part of those projects to be columns that identify where they are, that tell the story and the history of their community. So we have that where we've partnered a lot with the Arts and Science Council to deliver those products, but we have art pieces that are part of Thomason's Central Avenue that are on the corner there that went in over 20 years ago, and trash cans along the transit stops on Central Avenue, and murals on Freedom Drive.
Do you think people recognize that as art, or do they just think somebody designed something? Because the whole world is filled with design. People don't realize this, but artists and designers contributed to everything we see and touch.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unbelievable when you think about it, but do they see that as art?
Well, I don't know what sometimes what distinguishes art from great design. I mean, sometimes there are artists that are involved in creating things that are beautiful, whether it's a bench. Paul Sires did benches as a part of the project on Central. And sometimes that's fine. To tell a story of history in a sculpture, you have a sculpture, you have the historian. It all comes together to make a piece that's stronger than just plain concrete on a sidewalk.
I'm a little fuzzy on the history here, but I know that the city began to be involved in some way in public art in, what, the 1970s or even before that?
And about 1980.
Okay, and then there came this public arts commission, and then the city mandated, or the city and the county mandated, that 1% of all money spent on new public buildings would be spent on public art for those buildings. What has the impact of that been as we go around this city?
Well, and since that's what took place in 2001 is when the city and the county passed that ordinance, and it's not all cost of a construction project. Land is not covered in that, or architectural fees and those kind of things. There's only certain things that figure into that 1% allocation. But, for example, in 2001, when the ordinance was passed, we had about 20 pieces in the public collection. We now have about 120. So we are rapidly adding to the collection all over Mecklenburg County, not just in the center city. Almost every park project now has public art involved in it. We have a major effort over on Statesville Avenue with a project along where the Brightwalk neighborhood is to use art to help bridge that road because it cut through two neighborhoods, and we're going to use art as a bridge, not a physical bridge, but as a way to sort of say we connect. We're working on another project right there behind the new fire headquarters for the Joint Communications Center. We have a piece that's going in Bearden Park this summer, which is interesting that Bearden Park, the design team for Bearden Park, actually we used part of the public art allocation to hire an artist, Nori Sato, who worked with the designers. And actually, it's kind of hard if you're at ground level to see it, but if you're in a building and you look down on that park, the park is designed to be a reflection of Bearden's collage style of work, and it's quite a
so the park's a work of art.
The park itself is a work of art, and I think that we saw with the way the community has responded to that park. I mean, that park was loved from the moment it opened, and is still loved and very actively used. That there is something in that park that is very different than just walking into a green space.
Yeah, and I kind of feel that people in America today really want a communal experience. They want to be able to walk out into the public, and they're treating the public as their living rooms. People are building apartment complexes now where the amenity for the apartment complex is the street. It is the public space. It's the art. It's the walk to get there. I just came back from a trip to Paris and Berlin, and people for years there have been investing in the public realm. It's like you have a living room, you want a painting over the sofa. You want a little bit of art to enjoy. And people today are living more communally. They want to be outside, and they want spaces that really are embellished and designed and are beautiful to walk in.
Since you just came back from Paris, which is the most beautiful city in the world, in my humble opinion, talk about that, because great cities of the world have always had public art and loads of it. And those pieces, those works of art are landmarks not only in the city but around the world. They become associated with that area, and they're kind of like breathing points in a city. And you might be among the hustle and bustle, but you come upon this thing, whatever it may be, and you just kind of take a breath, and there it is.
Right. We stayed across from Luxembourg Gardens, which is 400 years old and is gorgeous and is loved. And it made me realize the value of really building parks, not for the next 20 years, but for the next 400 years, that we can make investments for ourselves in the future.
Tom Morshauer is with the City of Charlotte. Robert Bush is the president of the ASC, the Arts and Science Council. Sharon Dowell is an artist contributing to public art. We'll come right back in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members at AC Entertainment, presenting singer, songwriter, activist, and entrepreneur Annie DeFranco at the Neighborhood Theater Thursday, May 14th, 7 p.m. Tickets available at neighborhoodtheater.com. And Business North Carolina magazine, covering the economy, industry, and business of North Carolina each month. May features the state's top technology companies. Subscriptions online at businessnc.com and at the App Store. Well, the school year may be coming to an end, but education is a never-ending topic on this program and around the city. In Charlotte and in the legislature, business is pending that will affect the future of education, from nearly 20 new charter schools okayed to open in the fall to the future of vouchers for private school education. Teacher pay, of course, continues to be a topic of conversation, and the state's A through F grading system is being debated. We took a take a look at all of this and more tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell supports renewing the Patriot Act as is, but a federal court ruling striking down the routine government sweep of U.S. phone records adds pressure for reform. Debate over the limits of government surveillance.
Join the conversation on the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about public art, where it is, how it's function, how it functions, eventually how it's chosen, some of the projects underway to choose public art and to encourage the creation of public art in Charlotte with Robert Bush. He's the president of the Arts and Science Council. They're involved in helping choose artists and pieces and where they go. Tom Warshauer is the community engagement manager for the city of Charlotte in their neighborhood and business services division. And Sharon Dowell is an artist who has several pieces of public art, including murals in the city of Concord, part of the ASC's Art Pop Billboard project, which we will talk about again in a moment or two, and the United Buddy Bear sculpture, which is outside of the Mecklenburg County Main Public Library here uptown. She's also involved in projects for Charlotte Transit for cats. When you talk about Paris and Berlin and London and even New York, Chicago, Washington, they're all great pieces of public art in those cities. And it's transformed those cities, and it's given them landmark status. And that's what you think about when you think about those cities, when you come right down to it. How do we stack up in terms of similarly sized cities, not in terms of Paris, but how do we stack up in terms of similarly sized cities within this country?
Well, I think that Charlotte's sort of look on the sort of national art scene is growing, and a lot of it's because of the public art program, but also the performances and museums, etc. This is purely a one person's subjective thing, but Saturday I had friends in town from out of town, and we had gone to the Mint to see the Halston and Warhol exhibition, and we're in the gift shop after, and I actually found some things that I bought for Christmas presents. I was getting ahead of the game, I guess. And this woman was standing next to me at the register, and she said, "You're so smart, I should be buying gifts." And she said, "Do you know a lot about Charlotte?" And I said, "Well, yeah, I just live three blocks from here." And she was like, she asked me about the Nikki de St. Phalle piece in front of the Beckler. And then she turned to me and she said, "This is the most beautiful city we have been to. We're from out west, and we don't have this." She said the sculpture and the architecture and the parks and the green. She says, "You are living in paradise." And for that to come unsolicited, I think that's what we want people all over to think about Charlotte, and they come here for vacations, and they come here to visit museums and go to a baseball game and go to a concert in the park. So it's not just the physical sculpture or murals or those kind of things. It is things like that we've invested in random acts of culture that put pop-up performances all over the city and at the airport and in farmers markets. So you could be buying a tomato mic and the person selling you the tomato mic burst into the Barber of Seville. I mean, it's about engagement and animation of public space.
And years ago, when you look downtown now, it's a gorgeous skyline. It's really lit up beautifully. And that originally wasn't an accident. Years ago, Hugh McCall brought in someone to really talk to the community about what the tops of buildings could look like. So they're not all just flat buildings with no lighting. They're gorgeous. Looking at our downtown at night is really a beautiful experience.
Right.
I really hope on the public art side that we'll begin to embrace not just the public putting in art, but developers also doing that with their buildings.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions. If we have an unsolicited comment like the one that Robert experienced this weekend from a visitor to town, obviously we've been putting money into public art.
Right.
Was there a vision for it in the first place? was there a vision, if we put this money into public art, this is what it will be like here in 20, 30, 40 years, or we'll just put money into public art and what happens, happens. Was there a vision?
I think that there was, and actually, if you went back, Betty Chafin Rash was probably the first person when she was on council and mayor pro tem. She was the one that first started the push for public art, and she could very eloquently talk about how this was about making this a more beautiful place, making it a more accessible place, making it more engaging, and I think that those sort of visions have been fulfilled. David Howard, a current member of the city council, is a huge advocate of public art. He will, we were talking about Facebook earlier, he will send photographs from a trip to Barcelona, and he's showing Gaudi sculptures and talking about, we need this kind of stuff. And it's because of seeing how this art connects people. Mm-hmm. It's actually part of what this community has even told ASC in our last cultural plan. They said, the cultural sector here owns the platform for helping us understand each other. Because if you do it through the arts or the history and the stories, that builds a bridge that no one else can build.
Well, one of the things I said in the beginning, because it came from you guys, was was that public art can help a city or a neighborhood tell its story. You are an artist, Sharon, and you have several pieces in the public art arena. When you set out to make those pieces, when you were commissioned to do that, were you commissioned to tell a particular story, or did they just say, we like your work, we'd like a piece, do whatever?
It depends. Usually it's, there's a certain theme that they're looking for. I did some murals for Concord, and that was very specific. They wanted moments in history mm-hmm. from, the city of Concord. And so I interpreted that into my own style.
Is that hard to do?
Yes and no. Sometimes it can be very specific as far as what they want to see, but, I'm able to kind of work it into my style, and as long as I don't feel like I'm compromising my own style as an artist, then it's fine, and I haven't really had any problems with that. Sometimes you get exciting ones where people are like, I just want you to do your thing, I trust you, and that's really fun too. I kind of like the challenge of public art, because often you're given these parameters, like fit it within the space, or with the light rail project I'm doing, I'm designing glass, digital imagery for glass windscreens under the canopies, or mosaic murals for the walls that are going to be cast in place. And my background is as a painter, mm-hmm. but you get these opportunities to, they're very challenging, and it's a big learning curve.
Well, yeah, I was going to ask you about that too, because we are commissioning local artists to do a lot of these public art works, and local artists are generally studio artists, gallery artists. They have smaller pieces, although some of them are pretty big, but they're generally working, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, to paint for or sculpt for things that might go in a person's home or not necessarily a big public space. What is it like to have to scale it up?
Exciting, for sure. I've been a painter for, 13 years, and typically selling to residential clients mm-hmm. and some corporate commissions and things like that. But, of course it's exciting to see your work blown up to 10 by 20.
But do you have to think differently? Do you have to design differently?
Definitely. Oh, yes.
You mentioned the learning curve.
Yeah, you have the opportunity to make a huge impact with something large scale. But you have to think about all sorts of things I had never thought about before, as far as, how are people going to interact with it? Can they see it from far away or close up? Or how can I try to, engage people mm-hmm. and get my message across? It's a little bit different.
Does it change also in terms of what you use, what materials you use, what color you use, because against the sky, sometimes things disappear. Inside a house, they may pop.
To think about the environment. Is there going to be a tree in front of it? What's it going to look like in the middle of the day? Or, like with my light rail station, it's kind of in an industrial area. Mm-hmm. at Optimus Park, and so I wanted some bright pop, you know, kind of bring some happiness to the area.
Now, there have been among the transit stop pieces of public art, there have been some people scratching their heads and saying things that are not exactly positive. How do you get around? Because not everybody likes everything. Art's in the eye of the beholder. How do you get around that, the negative aspect of this on some people's parts when their money helped pay for it?
There's a lot of different kinds of pieces out there and a lot of different people. You're not going to have all art relate to all people. And that's okay. You really want things that cause people to think and things that some people love and things that some people may not like. Mm-hmm. You have a big group of people out there that want art. There's been some phenomenal pieces like the Tom Thone did. A lot of local people have done some great pieces, the mosaics, the pine cones. So you have a lot of local people that are doing great work here that people really do adore. The Firebird is much beloved. The photograph is sort of like our little mini Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, I think it's all right.
Everyone wants to get a picture in front of it. You just never know what's going to pop, and what might pop for someone today might be different than what they love in 50 years
tomorrow. I'm not sure that the people who pass the arena think of the bobbins out in front mm-hmm. as being art, but they are.
Oh,
well, and you know,
definitely.
But even something like the Eiffel Tower wasn't beloved when it was first built.
Right. They wanted it gone.
Right. So people's attitude towards different kinds of objects really changes over time.
Yeah.
So we could find things that people find controversial today that they really adore and love tomorrow.
Well, you know, art.
I find that, you know, I'm always getting into conversations with people about public art in Charlotte that they're like, I don't get it. What is that?
Mm-hmm.
But then once you explain to them what the history of the piece is, what it means, then they start to appreciate it more. And they're like, oh, okay. So I think education is key.
Well, the onion rings come to
exactly.
mind.
Exactly.
Those are on Wendover and Randolph, I think, the onion ring. They're not really called the onion rings, but
it's actually whatever the botanical name of magnolia is the name of
it's
the
piece. It's a magnolia leaf, isn't it?
A magnolia leaf or petal.
Yeah.
But the same artist did the piece on the light rail line in the South End that is the big
discs,
which are plow discs.
Uh-huh.
And I actually, we were doing a thing for International Sculpture Day about talking about the collection, and we were showing pieces, and I actually love that piece. And I know it's very controversial, but the reason I love it is I grew up in this area, so I understand red clay. I have dealt with red clay my entire life, you know, dirtying clothes and dirtying feet and all that kind of stuff. And I remember my mother taking us to the farm to pick up corn or cucumbers or whatever, and seeing the red clay, you know, mashed onto the plow.
Yeah.
And so when I drive by that, I remember that. And I also know that the neighbors in that area who worked with Thomas Sayer, who's the artist, to sort of influence the piece, said, we want people to remember that this used to be farms.
Yeah.
So it tells a piece of our history, but it also is a memory for people who grew up in this area.
We're curious, as people listen, what their favorite piece of public art in Charlotte might be. You can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at WFAE. Not everybody is successful. Not every piece of art is successful, or it doesn't always turn out even the way the artist intended, because it kind of takes on a life of its own. I'm sure it's like writing a book or writing a play. Things just become what they are, and it's not necessarily always in the control of the artist. For instance, some people have really criticized the Martin Luther King Jr. statue on the Mall in Washington because it was done by a Chinese artist, and it doesn't look like Dr. King. The I-77 bridge over Exit 28 in Cornelius has been criticized for not turning out as it was planned. Former Cornelius Mayor Jeff Tartt was quoted as saying, everyone recognizes the design of the mast at Exit 28 falls woefully short of expectations. Now, that project cost around $2.5 million. I know you had nothing to do with it. Nobody in this room had anything to do with it. But what if it had been a Charlotte project? What would you say? What would the consequences be? Is that a risk whenever you commission a piece of public art?
I think it's always a risk, and it's why the process that we run has very specific checkpoints throughout it. You know, we usually select the artist based on their past work. We don't pick the artist on what they propose for that specific space. It's based on their body of work and their skill. and how they have incorporated work into other places. But then the Public Art Commission, which is appointed by City Council and the County Commission and ASC, has to approve all along the way different design steps in the process to make sure the piece is what they were expecting it to be. And we have sometimes where an artist will say, I just can't do this. And so we change, we go to the next artist on the list. I mean, so it's, there is always that risk. I think that we're getting much better at it than we were in the past. Part of the problems, and it's not just here, in other cities as well, part of the problem is when the political part of the community gets too involved in the picking of the art or taking away the art. And we could have a whole conversation about that, so I won't get too deep. But people don't like politicians telling them what is good art and what is bad art, whether it's visual art or performing arts. They want to make those decisions on their own.
What I was going to ask, is there any fail-safe mechanism in place that protects either the 1% money that goes to public art for public building construction or anything that happens in the course of a year or 10 years as these pieces are commissioned to protect it from the vagaries of politics?
Well, I think you have to realize that you're really building a collection for the public.
Right.
And you're building a collection for a broad section of the public. And it's okay for some people to like one thing and some people not to like it. If you're going to be building a collection, even inside your own home, if there are three or four people that are living in a house together, they're not going to all agree on every painting and every piece of art in that house being a great piece of work. Some people relate to different things differently.
Right.
And that's sort of a part of building a collection for the public, is that we're a big public and a lot of different artistic expressions.
Now, the ASC, the City of Charlotte, the Public Art Commission, has launched a public art program called the Creative Partnership Initiative. If I understand this correctly, it's a way to bring public art to neighborhoods around the city and get those neighborhoods involved in the creation of public art. Whose idea was this?
Well, it actually came from some members of Tom's team and the city budget office. There were some little dribs and drabs of money left over from other projects that were not spent. And so they came to ASC and said, what do you think about a project? We did some things to sort of go forcefully into neighborhoods to try and help them do some different kinds of things. And so we had a project. We invited neighborhoods to apply. We had 20-something neighborhoods apply. We could only do pick five.
Mm-hmm.
Then the neighborhoods.
It's in itself really astounding. People really want to see art in their community.
And this is separate from the 1%.
This is leftover 1% money.
All right.
And we picked five neighborhoods, and then those neighborhoods got to select artists or artist teams to do the work. And there, some have moved very smoothly than others. Part of that is because if it's public dollars, it has to be on public right-of-way or in a public space that's owned by the city or the county. And that can be difficult to do in some neighborhoods. And then but some will be starting to occur soon in spaces. The one in the Elizabeth neighborhood is very much about walking and through the neighborhood, and there are little sort of story houses along the way. There's a piece out in Hickory Grove that's a more sculptural piece.
We'll come back and talk more about that in a couple of seconds, because you're awarding, you awarded $23,500 for each of five projects. That seems like an arbitrary number to me, but we'll come back and talk about that. $23,500 is kind of a weird number. And we're coming back in a second. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Black Hawk Hardware, presenting the Big Green Egg event Saturday, May 16th. Samples and demonstrations by the Big Green Egg demo team, locally owned and mismanaged since 1977. BlackHawkHardware.com. And CPCC Summer Theater, tickets for all shows, including Lionel Bart's Oliver, Cole Porter's Anything Goes, and Disney's Beauty and the Beast Jr., now available. Details at tix.cpcc.edu or 704-330-6600. 6534. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell supports renewing the Patriot Act as is, but an appeals federal court ruling striking down the routine government sweep of U.S. phone records as pressure for reform. So on the Diane Rehm Show in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock, there'll be a debate over the limits of government surveillance that you are invited to join. That's in 20 minutes, and if you'd like to join our conversation, do it now.
You're at the store and you see in big letters on a package 20% more for free. Do you go for it?
I never fall for that. Like, I see extra 20%, and if it's not the same brand I've been using, then I wouldn't even think of choosing it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Is 20% more free really free? Our series I've Always Wondered, next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m.
Marketplace this evening at 6:30 on 90.7 WFAE. Listener-funded public radio.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking to Robert Bush, the president of the Arts and Science Council, Tom Warshauer, community engagement manager for neighborhood and business services for the city of Charlotte, and Sharon Dowell, who is an artist who has ventured into the realm of public art of late. She has several decent-sized pieces in either up or going up in process, thanks to funding from the ASC and others. Let's get back to this creative partnership initiative in which you chose five projects that neighborhoods could apply for neighborhood public art.
Right.
$23,500 was the top figure that you were going to award to these neighborhoods. What do you get for $23,500? How did you arrive at $23,500? Why not $24,000? Why not $23,000?
We took the amount of money that we had and we divided it by five.
Well,
that's how
go.
We came up to with the amount. This was really an effort in many ways to engage more local artists who were wanting to try out working in the public realm, because as you and Sharon were talking about earlier, there's some real difference between being a studio artist who works in their studio and sells their work in a gallery. Sharon talked about having to engage with the community, but there's also material differences. You have to think about something that's going to last in the public space. And then there's engineering and there's all these things.
It has to be safe.
It has to be safe. If it's in the right of way, it's got to be something that isn't going to kill somebody if they have a wreck next to it. You know, all those kind of things are part of the conversation. And so it was a process to make that happen. So in some cases, we would probably prefer that we sort of spent that money on temporary work that was going to be there for a while, but it was going to go away because of the size of the budgets. But the neighborhoods are very firm that they want something that's going to last, as Tom would say. They want to tell their story.
And they think they're going to get the Eiffel Tower for $23,500.
Right, yeah. Right. So in one case, we have a neighborhood that I think is waiting to see what happens with some neighborhood planning that's going on right now in that area that actually might enhance the budget so that there is more of a significant piece. But as I said, we have others that are moving forward now. Mm-hmm. And we think it's a great way to introduce the art forms all over the city. We also think we really should be starting to explore more temporary work, where we're even talking to a developer now about, rather than put another piece of sculpture on a plaza, that they build into the plaza the platforms and the lighting to make it a outdoor museum that the museums here in town, the public art program here in town, could actually do outdoor exhibitions of temporary work or sculpture from other places, so that there's this ongoing conversation around a theme or interaction with the public. It's not just, here's the piece.
As you hear the word temporary art being bandied about here, Sharon, as an artist, does it make you shudder? I mean, art's supposed to be permanent, isn't it?
No, not at all. I think temporary art, conceptual art, performance, those are all really important in addition to visual art. And it's kind of exciting, maybe if something's only going to be there for a short amount of time, it creates this buzz and, you know, people want to come see it.
Well, the fact that it's only in a particular location for a period of time is one thing. The fact that it's designed to not be there ever anywhere again is another. I mean, temporary meaning that it's going to be It's not going to last.
But so many people went up to New York when Christo did the the Gate projects.
I
mean, they're phenomenal.
I was there.
Phenomenal pieces that really create an opportunity for you to be there that moment. Yeah. And Spoleto did a series of temporary installations one year that I still think were just outstanding, that really got people to travel all over the city. And they had to do it right then. Mm-hmm. You had a month or 2 months. You had to go see the art. You had to get around the community. And they really addressed important issues of living in the South in Charleston at that time. So temporary can really be a wonderful thing to be able to do.
It's time to bring the Spoleto Festival to Charlotte, by the way. I'm just going to drop that in your ear.
Okay.
A lot of artists, it seems to me, particularly painters and sculptors, live in their own world. They work alone in a studio. They are executing their vision, whatever's coming from their muse. When you start doing public art, though, as you mentioned, you have to be collaborative. You have to have you have to take in information from other people who are paying the freight. How difficult is that for somebody who is used to just standing there in front of a blank canvas and doing whatever it is that they think is right?
I think it can be challenging. A lot of artists work in different ways. For me, it's kind of a natural transition because my work is already about the energy of place and trying to capture that identity of a community. And I have a lot of vibrant color and texture. So it's just kind of the themes that I work in anyway lends itself to public art.
Getting back to this idea of temporary art, you participated in is it called Art Pop? Is that it? Mm-hmm. That's the Billboard campaign with a combined effort between you and Adams Outdoor, where they're giving, 5 or 6 billboards a year or 10?
20.
20, oh my God. That's a lot of revenue. Mm-hmm. To art being displayed on the billboards. No ad, just art.
Right.
When you design something for like that, that's certainly temporary, and it's not original. It's done. I guess it's duplicated in some way, as you would duplicate a billboard. Correct.
It's on vinyl.
So, what is that experience like?
Oh, well, I can't tell you how exciting it is to drive down. Mine was on Wilkinson, or on the way to the airport, and I was like, look. There's me on a billboard. So exciting. And I see a lot of my friends. I know a lot of the artists here. So I see a lot of my friends, have their art up on the billboards. It's so exciting. But it's such a great way to connect the general public to artists that are in their backyard. Excuse me. And I know several artists have, like Robert said earlier, gotten commissions from it.
So the art part, the art pop piece that you did for that billboard, did you just think of the billboard as just being a super, super big canvas, or did you have to do something in your mind that was going to make it different from a piece of work that would hang on a wall?
I just thought of it as a large canvas, and I actually took an existing painting of mine and just cropped it. And it was a challenge to find an existing painting that would work within that space, but I found something that would work.
We've asked people to send in their ideas of what they think is their favorite piece of public art. We've gotten some people responding here, but before we do, Andre emails, can you speak about the public art in Charlotte that is focused on social or cultural topics? Do the guests feel like there is a need for more of this type of work in Charlotte?
I think so, absolutely, especially after I heard Brian Stevenson talk about growing up in the South, where he had 23 monuments to Civil War heroes, and they weren't exactly his Civil War heroes. And I think there's a lot of stories. He said that, there really are a lot of stories that are local that we could tell that really relate to people who fought for equity in the Civil Rights Movement, fought for the Underground Railroad. There are a lot of stories that we aren't telling. And art, I think, just come back and being a Jew and just coming back from Berlin, when communities really tell the story and own their history, it can be a really important part of reconciliation and moving forward to really be able to publicly say, this is really what happened in our community, and now let's move forward on it. So I think that there's a lot for us to deal with in the South. We have a phenomenal museum, the Levine Museum of the New South, but I think we need more monuments that really talk to the unique history.
So how do you that would certainly be controversial in many quarters. So how do you make that happen?
Well, I think that's a part of putting it out there and letting people then begin to think about how that relates. How does Queen's Table take a look at the stories that are yet to be told in our community? How do we embed those throughout our parks? I think there's a real interest in our community in going there, and perhaps Robert can talk
about
that some more.
Well, I mean, there's actually a really interesting piece that Sean Cassidy, who's another regional artist from the region, who did. He's probably best known for his work along the light rail line, but he did a piece for us over at Enderley Park that is was a prototype actually for what he ended up doing at the railway, but it's used concrete, but in the form that he poured the concrete in to make this bench, he actually gathered clothing from the people that lived around the park, and he embedded that into the form and then poured the concrete. And when they pulled the form out, the shapes of the clothing and even the color had embedded itself into the concrete. And it tells this story about this community sheltering one another. And so it's a really – I think that you can do things in art that can be very significant. And I think that it's important for us to, as we look at a building – for example, we didn't take the public art allocation for the new fire headquarters because the fire department has these incredible restored fire engines that they're using in the lobby of that building as an exhibition space. Mm-hmm. That is, I think that is the art for that building, but it's a history of who we are. But I think it's, we were talking about the whole, the civil rights thing, and it's like, you know, where is the Dorothy Counts statue walking up to that school? That's our story that we need to make sure is told.
Well, you're in charge. Where is that statue?
Well, we don't get to pick the locations. The city or the county selects locations. But we can influence the story that we are wanting to be told.
And a part of that comes to artists working in community and listening for the stories that are in the community and the stories that they want to be able to, they want to see told. And then priming that pump and asking them about more than just the stories of children, but what has actually happened in this community. So I think that as we become more sophisticated, we'll learn better about more stories and be able to tell them better.
Do artists think like this, or is this something that is happening because the ASC and the city are developing these neighborhood projects that cause artists to think like this?
I think a lot of us do. I know I do. When I did actually my first mural was through the ASC, and I met with community residents over in the Mary Oaks neighborhood, and I heard what was important to them, what they thought of when they thought of their neighborhood. And they came up with a lot of things I never would have known about, and I learned about the history, and I incorporated those as, you know, imagery into the work, and it changed it. It made it what it wouldn't have been otherwise.
But you even brought up the arena and the light bobbins out front, the Andrew Lester piece. That is very much about what used to sit on that site. It used to be a textile mill. Mm-hmm. And so those bobbins and the shuttlecocks that are in the niches all around the building that are part of the textile process, the light rail stop wall there is patterns that were Charlotte weaving patterns from our textile mills. I mean, that is art interpreting what a place used to be, so we don't forget that.
Right.
Textile industry helped build this city.
Right. A comment on Twitter, Metamorphosis, that's what you call it, Metamorphosis or Metamorphosis at Whitehall Business Park is a great piece of public art. And I don't think a lot of people have seen it because it's not exactly in an accessible location. But this is a piece of sculpture that changes all the time.
And is absolutely worth the trip down to Westinghouse to see the piece. It is amazing.
It's a gigantic head.
Mm-hmm.
And the facial features on it can change because it's completely, it's done in sections and it's completely motorized.
Yes.
So it can change. Does it change into actual people's faces or am I thinking of something else?
No, it does. I'm not aware that it gives you an actual person's face. It's sort of one person's face that changes.
Okay. Crystal on Facebook, the writer's desk outside of Imagineons, her favorite piece. Aaron on Twitter, I wish Charlotte had more street art. Isn't that temporary public art? Doesn't have to be, does it?
Doesn't have to be.
No.
We're actually exploring some new ways of coloring a sort of a new kind of sidewalk that could actually be the sidewalk could become a canvas for an artist. And it's just by the dyeing of the concrete that mm-hmm. it becomes a work of art.
Peter in Wesley Chapel writes, the Chicago Cloud Gate, popularly known as the Bean, is a must-see visitor attraction in Chicago because visitors can interact with it by taking pictures of the city skyline and the viewers themselves reflected in it. Charlotte would do well to have a piece of art as creative and interactive. Do we not have our own tiny little bean?
We have a little bean over on the Greenway. It's actually a mirror ball that is right there at Midtown on the Little Sugar Creek Greenway that is very popular for that purpose. The bean in Chicago far exceeds any commission we have ever had to do.
It's a good challenge to our community. There are a lot of pieces that I would love to see in Charlotte. I'd love to see a James Turrell be constructed in Charlotte.
Yes.
I would love to see a Richard Serra in Charlotte. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the wonderful things about the comment from Chicago and thinking about other cities is, how do we build our own collection of fabulous pieces in our community that we can really enjoy here? So the bean is definitely a wonderful one there, and we need some patrons here and some property owners here and developers that want to embed our cities with that kind of collection.
And I think variety is key. It would be great to have something like a James Turrell, and then, you know, someone mentioned street art and graffiti. I love it if it's good. You know, you go to Berlin, you know, Tom, and it's everywhere, and it's wonderful.
And you've said that we are building this collection of public art, and the ASC has put together a walking tour. I think one that uses a cell phone app, so
yes,
you can get a self-guided tour. Tell us
about
that.
You can download it from charlottecultureguide.com. There's a public art walking tour, and it's got many different segments. There's a Center City one. There's one that's more out towards the university area, but there are definitely lots of places to go. We even have a public art scavenger hunt. If you have a team of people that you want to put through their paces, you can do a 90-minute scavenger hunt around the Center City.
Give us the website again for the app.
CharlotteCultureGuide.com.
And it's an app. You just download it onto your – is it for iPhone, Android phone, Windows phone?
Or podcast.
It's a podcast. So it's you just download it into your podcast player and listen to it as you go.
Correct.
Where will we see new public art cropping up in the coming months or coming years that we don't have it now? Very quickly.
Joint Communications Center on Statesville Avenue. We're looking at some really interesting things there. A new piece at the airport at the Wilson Air Terminal that'll go in June. And then a Richard Hunt, most famous African-American sculptor of the 20th century, homage to his friend Romare Bearden, will go in August.
That's Robert Bush, president of the Arts and Science Council. They're involved in choosing artists and helping support public art. Tom Warshauer's community engagement manager for neighborhood and business services for the city of Charlotte. They're engaged in all of this. And Sharon Dowell, an artist who has several pieces out there. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks with Mike Collins is a production of 90.7 W.